On this week's episode, we're going to dive down a bit of a curiosity of mine. I know that when we think about brewing beer in general, we always think of beer being brewed in countries like the United States and England and Germany, even Australia. But in all reality, beer is really a very global beverage. So, that being said, I was able to connect with a brewer down in the Philippines, and I wanted to find out what it was like to brew in Southeast Asia. So we're going to do a deep dive into brewing in the Philippines this week on Homebrewing DIY. Building recipes and taking good notes are two of the key fundamentals of making great beer. This is one of the first things that you learn when becoming a new brewer. I started taking notes on a sheet from my extract kit and then quickly moved to brewing software. I've tried many different types of brewing software, and then I found Brewfather. This is the one piece of software that you need for recipes and very detailed brew day notes, as well as fermentation notes. Brewfather also integrates with some of the topics that we discuss on the show, like the till hydrometer, the Eisspindle, and ferment track. You need no other piece of software than Brewfather. One of the best parts of Brewfather is that you can try it for free. All you need to do is head to our website, homebrewingdiy.beer, and click on the Brewfather banner to sign up for free today. Once again, that's homebrewingdiy.beer, and sign up for Brewfather today. Keeping a clean brewery is the key to making great beer that doesn't get contaminated. Do you use a glass or plastic carboy for your fermentation? Did you know that getting your carboy clean can be tough, especially removing the crucin ring? Even with traditional carboy cleaning tools, it can take a lot of time and not get your carboy completely clean. Well, today there's a new tool that can easily clean your carboy and do it fast, and that tool is called a scrubber ducky. Scrubber duckies are a new magnetic carboy cleaner that are easy to use and get the cleaning results required in brewing. Drop a magnetic scrubber into your carboy and be able to scrub away all of the grime and that hard to clean crucin. They are no match for scrubber duckies, and you can get yours today at scrubberduckies.com. Once again, head over to scrubberduckies.com. Have you ever wanted to make a podcast? Do you have a subject you want to discuss with listeners? Do you even know where to start? Well, if you want to make a podcast and you want to get started now, I could not recommend Anchor enough. Anchor is the easiest way to make a podcast. Anchor gives you everything you need in one place for free, which you can use right from your phone or computer. Creation tools allow you to record and edit your podcast so it sounds great. They'll distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard everywhere. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many more. And you can easily make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Hey, look, I shopped around for a place to post my podcast, and Anchor was the easiest, most streamlined experience you could ask for. So if you're looking for a place for your new podcast, download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Once again, download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. And welcome back to Homebrewing DIY, the podcast that takes on the do-it-yourself aspect of homebrewing. Gadgets, contraptions, and parts. This show covers it all. On this week's show, we're talking to Raul Masangkay. We're going to talk to him about what it's like to own a brewery in the Philippines. Kind of funny, I ended up on a Facebook group where I was in the Philippines homebrewing Facebook group and just, you know, lounging around in there, figuring out what was going on. And
really connected with Raul and was able to talk to him. Funny, though, because it was in a homebrewing group, I thought Raul was a homebrewer, and then when we actually ended up doing the podcast episode, I found out later that he actually owns a brewery. So just kind of a little funny story there, and it'll be a really fun, cool episode. That being said, this episode is coming to you week after week because of all of our patrons over at Patreon. So head over to patreon.com/homebrewingDIY and give it any amount. Your support helps the show come to you week after week. I'd like to thank all of our supporters. It's because of you that we can even bring this show to you. Another way to support the show is to head on over to Ko-fi, that's ko-fi.com/homebrewingDIY, and there you can give a one-time support. I got a one-time support where Captain Fucher bought me a few beers, and so once again, thank you so much for your support, Captain. I really do appreciate it. Your support is going to help us keep coming to you week after week. Another way to support the show is to head over to podchaser.com, or if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and scroll to the bottom of your app and leave us a 5-star review. Your reviews are going to help this show get found by other brewers. The last way to support the show is head over to homebrewingdiy.beer, and you can there use our sponsor banners. Those sponsor banners are going to help, or are actually going to keep your prices exactly the same, but they also support the show because those sponsors know that we sent you, and they then in turn support the show. So if you're looking at buying a brew bag or shopping at Adventures in Homebrewing or even getting Brewfather, head over to homebrewingdiy.beer and use those sponsor banners. A couple of cool things going on in my homebrewing world. I actually just got all of my parts together for my BrewPie remix build. I'm sitting here actually as we talk, holding the shield in my hand just before I'm going to solder it together. I will post some images on my Instagram. If you follow me on Instagram, you can check out my build there. I will be posting it there. I might even do a bit of a blog post on it. We'll see how things come together. That being said, I'm pretty excited about the project. I will say Lee Bussey made this, acquiring the parts, very, very easy. He actually has a GitHub repository for the hardware, and in there is a one-click buy all the parts you need to build it from Mouser, and that was really nice. Then I wasn't trying to find all of the different resistors that I didn't have and capacitors. I could just push a button and all that stuff just showed up. It took about 3 days to get here, and I'm pretty excited to start my build. So keep an eye out for that on my social media. Well, let's jump into this week's episode where we're going to talk to Raul Masangkay about how he is brewing in the Philippines. I'd like to welcome Raul Masangkay. He is a avid homebrewer and beer maker out of the Philippines. And I'd like to welcome to Homebrewing DIY. How are you, Raul?
Hi, Carter. Good evening.
Excellent. Well, I had you on the show because we talk about homebrewing across pretty much everywhere in the globe when we think of homebrewing, right? We think of homebrewing in countries such as the United States, England. We think of homebrewing in countries like Germany or even generally all of Europe and Australia, even Japan. But we don't really think about homebrewing a lot when it comes to Southeast Asia. And recently I started working with somebody who's helping me out with the show that's based out of the Philippines. And she has introduced me to this entire world of homebrewing that is based out of the Philippines. And so I thought we would have Raul on the show to kind of discuss what the homebrewing scene looks like in an island nation in Southeast Asia. So Raul, why don't we just start with how did you get started homebrewing?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Colter. So I'm Raul Masangkay, and I'm actually a brewery owner here in the Philippines. And I've been brewing for 7 years, 5 years as a home brewer. I lived in the U.S. for those 5 years and moved back here in the Philippines for the last 2 years Yeah, I've been brewing on a commercial scale. So yeah, we opened a brewery.
So started off as a home brewer in the United States, and then once you got to the Philippines, decided to go pro when you got there, right?
Yes, that's correct. So I live in Virginia, and I started my home brewing journey there. So I, same with the other, home brewers, tried to go to beer home brewing groups, home brewing clubs, learned home brewing online and some videos, and try to attend some, actually even some schools that's related to brewing. When I feel like I know a little bit on the brewing side, then I decided to just move back in the Philippines and see if I can continue with the journey.
Well, this is gonna add, this opens a whole can of worms for me when I think about it. So let's start with, what are the liquor laws like in the Philippines? So, like, for example, in the United States, if I wanted to open a brewery, I have to get a federal tax stamp. There's a lot of red tape for me to get through to open a brewery. What does that look like in the Philippines?
Yeah, actually, here it's not that strict. It's a little bit loose, but you still need to have a business permit first. And if you want to be, if you wanted to distribute your beers, you have to get FDA approvals. So these are permits. These permits will take a while, but the government is not that strict with home brewers selling their beer. So we have like small breweries here that are selling beers online, and they're still okay. But if you're going to the commercial scale, then yes, you have to also get the permits. And I feel like it's actually tighter here to get the FDA permits, because for example, every beer that we have to release in the market, it needs to go to FDA testing. And I know in the US it's not like that. So yeah. It's just that the execution is not being, it's not really being, it's not being executed here, that the brewers are not allowed to sell beers if they don't have the permit.
Okay. So like, for example, if I were a home brewer and I wanted to possibly sell some of my beer to my friends, that would be totally legal. Whereas that would probably be a federal offense here in the United States, right?
Correct. Yeah. Well, it's still illegal, but yeah, you can still get away with it.
Yeah, you get away with it. Nobody's really you're not going to get in a lot of trouble over it.
Exactly. Yes, it's illegal, but yeah, you can still get away with it.
And so, just out of curiosity, you said that every time you create a new beer, so like, for example, let's say you make a new IPA, you have to send that off to the FDA or the equivalent of that in the Philippines. And they're going to test it before you can actually sell it to people. Is that the process?
Yes. So all the product line item that you have to submit them for, you need to get CPR, Certificate of Product Registration from FDA. And to get that, you have to submit the beers on a laboratory test so that they will check, the alcohol and other bacteria or contaminations in the beer. And then the FDA will give you, that permit, the CPR permit. If it's good, then you can start selling in the market.
Which should have no problem because it's beer, because beer has no contamination in it generally, right?
Correct. That's right. Actually, there's that's right. And compared to distilled spirits, like you have the methanol, right? But for beer, they're also strict with what you put in the label. For example, the ABV. They can also go to your brewery and sample some of your beers or collect some bottles, and they also want to check the ABV. So if it's too far from your ABV in the label, then yes, they will not give you that permit. So they're strict with that too.
Yeah, that makes sense. They do the same thing here. If you have to submit all of your labels, I believe, to the ATF, and or there's a database where you have to upload them, and they have to be, your recipes have to meet them, and that's pretty similar here in the States.
Correct.
I was gonna say, what kind of beers are you personally making in your brewery?
Yeah. So my influence is on the American ale, so IPAs, and love pale ales, IPAs. I think I have like three line items that are IPAs, and then two pale ales and American stout. Sometimes we make some Belgian styles and Belgian light beer. So most of our beers are American influenced styles.
And so you're making American style ales, and you have to get American style ingredients for that. Where and how are you getting those ingredients? Are you shipping them in yourself, or are there local distributors?
Yeah, so there are local distributors. When we started, like maybe 2.5 years ago, we don't have a lot of suppliers. But thankfully, there was an Asia beer conference here in that was done here in the Philippines, and a lot of suppliers came in, and now we have, you know, a lot of new brands. So for malts, for example, we have two distributors that are bringing malts. We are also bringing malts from UK, which is a Mountains brand. And for hops, these two distributors are also selling. But most of the ingredients that we have are, you know, the old, the classic hops varieties. We don't get a lot of the new hop varieties that you have in the U.S.
So a lot of the sea hops, so
correct.
Cascade,
yes. Columbus, yes. Those are the ones. Simcoe, at least we have that. Citra, Mosaic, we use that in the brewery. Sometimes we get Galaxy from time to time. A distributor can bring in some Galaxy hops, which we love here. And but for the new hops like Sabro and other hops, it's hard for us to get those hops.
I gotta be honest, they're still hard for us to get here. If you're at the homebrew level, it's kind of like the time of year, and then they run out or they get old, and that's kind of how it is. So why don't we walk through some of the beers that you're making and maybe talk us through a bit of your brewery and some of the equipment that you have. I'd love to see what the brewery looks like in the Philippines. So for example, why don't you just walk us through how you built your brewery and maybe some of the equipment you use through your process?
Yeah, sure. When I came back here 2.5 years ago, so I brought with me a one barrel Blickman system that I bought in the US. I put it in the 20 footer container, brought it here. And I have that one barrel system, and I bought some fermentation tanks from a supplier in China, really good brand. We brought those tanks here too. So we started brewing on. We have like four fermenters and one bright tank. So we started with that. The first model that I have is more on the tap room, a brew pub setup. The brewery actually was inside my sister-in-law's restaurant. We started there, so she's serving food while I'm the one serving beer. And slowly we're scaling our brewery. So just last year, we brought in 10 barrel system fermenters, and this year we brought in 500 liters or a 5 barrel brew house. So my brewing setup is more on like a double batch brew, where sometimes we do a high gravity beer and we just dilute it so that we can still produce the same amount. We can still fill the tank, basically. So I have a cold room. I just invested on a canning machine because of the pandemic. Only able to sell beers, outside, and there was a crazy liquor ban here in the Philippines for the last, few months. We were like, the government doesn't want us to sell in the tap room, so we didn't have a choice but to start packaging our beers.
Yeah, that's kind of the case here, where you have a lot, because of the pandemic, a lot of beer, specifically until just recently, was pretty much sold to go. And if you didn't have a canning line, you were scrambling to get one, right?
Correct. Yeah, we did the... Actually, our model was on a tap room, so we had a lot of beers on kegs, and we distribute to some bars and restaurants in the metro. And when the pandemic hit, we were already bottling a few of our variants, but this time we have a full blast on everything. Like, we have bottles on ciders and we have cans on beers. We're also doing hard ciders, actually. So that was something that I would like to introduce here in the Philippines when I move back.
Is hard cider a popular drink there, or is it something that's kind of new to the area?
Yeah, it's totally new. When I moved back here 3 years ago, so it's like people are like, what's this? They actually think it's a beer. So we made a cider from of course apples, and we added some local fruits to it like mangoes or soursop, and like they think that's a mango beer. They post it, you know, online and say it's mango beer, but we're trying to, you know, slowly introduce it and educate the market that it's not a beer, it's a cider, and it's made from fermented apples. So, but yeah, we're the only brewery that's doing the cider right now. I think some home brewers are starting to do some ciders. I'm really happy to see the cider scene is growing here.
Cider is so delicious. It's so easy to drink. And to be honest, if you're not into hoppy beers, it's an easy thing other than like light lager to be like, here, have this wonderful cider. It's sweet and easy to drink, right?
Correct. Yeah. And actually, here in our weather, it's hot here, so it's very refreshing to have a cider. You know, in the beach, you get some cider, and our food too. Most of them are like fatty food, so you know, the cider acidity can cut through those foods. So it's really perfect for you know, beer, cider, and the food pairing.
That's awesome. And so how many barrels a year would you say you're producing right now? Let's take it down. How many barrels a month do you think you're producing? I think a year is a little long.
So every month we can produce. Right now we're producing 3,000 bottles. Until we get our expansion completed. So we're hoping to produce at least 20,000 bottles in a month once we complete the expansion. So yeah, we're still utilizing the two barrel system right now until we finish everything. So in terms of barrel, when I move here, I'm already on liters. So before it's like, you know, you know, the Celsius Fahrenheit, and then the, you know, the kilo and the pound.
Hey, we're a global show. You can go to, we can do metric here. That's okay.
Yeah, that's good. So we produce 1,000 liters a month, basically, and that's the 3,000 bottles. So I can say like, let's say 1,200 per year, but hopefully we will complete our expansion.
Awesome. And what are you looking for in your expansion? Are you gonna go to like a 10 barrel brew house, a 30 barrel brew house? What are you looking to go to?
Actually we brought in a 5 barrel brew house. It's already here. We just need to complete the installation. It was already delayed because we were planning this like early this year. Then the pandemic hit and our equipment got stuck in China. So it was only recently that we were able to bring them here. So we're just slowly completing the installation. So it's the expansion is a 1,000 liters or 610 barrels. And a 5 barrel brew house, so we will just be doing a double batch to fill the fermenter.
That's awesome.
And one a bright tank too. So so 7 tanks.
Yeah. What is your most popular beer?
Our most popular beer right now is the Mixtape Pale Ale. So it's an American Pale Ale. It's a Cascade and a Centennial Pale Ale. We use California ale yeast. A while ago you mentioned about the ingredients. So Fermentis is very popular here in Asia. Actually, even in the Asia Brewing Conference, they're very visible to all the brewers, and most of the breweries are using them. I'm used to using White Labs and Y yeast when I was there. And sometimes I bring in some of these yeast. I still visit the US and move. I still bring in some. So we just propagate them. We use Fermentis and White Labs basically, and we just propagate them and just keep them. So.
That's awesome. Have you tried any? We talk about Kvike on this show all the time. Have you tried any Kvike yet?
Yes, I did. Actually, it was, you know, of course, Kvike is very popular, and a lot of people here are using it because of the temperature that we have in Asia.
I mean, you don't have to worry about it. You can literally just throw it on your back porch and make a beer. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. The problem is you have to heat up the fermenter, right? We don't have that problem here. So we don't have that problem here. So it's actually, you know, maybe you still need the temperature controls to lower down the temperature because if it might be too high. So, we did that. We did the Kvike. We actually released a lot of beers using that yeast. Just that it didn't have the profile that we wanted on our beer, so we stick to our usual house yeast.
Was it not clean enough? Was it was it throwing an off flavor? What was your thoughts?
I get some acidity on it. I get some sourness to it. I did it on an IPA. I get some sourness, and I did it on a stout too. So basically, most of our styles we tried the Kvike. And there was this flavor that keeps on popping up, which is a little bit of sourness. I don't know, maybe it's dropping the pH too low because of the high temperature fermentation. Maybe we're not doing it the right way. That's something that we have to figure out. But we're like in this situation wherein we don't want to lose, you know, a batch, or we don't want to experiment. We just keep on making, you know, beers that our consumers are, you know, are fond of. So. We just stick to our house yeast. Later. Yeah.
Well, we will offline. I'd love to talk to you about that and maybe see about troubleshooting it, because we've been having really good luck getting clean beers out of Kvike, but it's specific to the strain, right? There are certain strains that will give you a little bit of sourness. There's some that are going to give you a little bit of fruitiness, and it's it's real specific to the strain of Kvike that you're getting. The good news is that you can dry them out and they travel well. So maybe after this, we'll talk about a little yeast swap.
Thank you. We did the, WLP518 Opsfog yeast. That's the one that I got. So that's the only Kvike yeast that we tried so far. But I haven't looked at other Kvike yeast. So
there's some out there that we're getting that, like for example, Oslo is a beer I just made, and there's actually strains that are coming out from some yeast labs here in North America that are doing, you can do pseudo lagers in the 80s, but you get like a clean profile like a lager. Kind of crazy.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. Wow. So, you want to get our hands on those issues.
Yeah, exactly. So we were talking a bit about your popular beers, and your most popular is a pale ale. What's the malt bill on it?
Yeah, it's a, we use Vienna, and we use Mountain, so we have a Maris Otter. So it's a Maris Otter and a Vienna blend. And yeah, the hops is a Cascade and a Centennial. And, just a California clean yeast. That's basically the.
You don't need much more than that. I think Maris Otter and Vienna are two of my favorite malts, those blended together. I think that's one trick that I love to teach homebrewers, especially when they're new, is to say, "Hey, a great way to add complexity to your beer when you're looking for." A beer that you may like you're not looking to add a bunch of different like crystal or those types of malts into it. A great way to add complexity is to actually blend base malts, and you can really get a unique flavor that way. And I prefer that as to adding adjuncts or anything like that.
Yeah, same. Even the Turo, sometimes if we have a different brand of Turos, then that can even add a little bit of complexity to it. You're just having the same base type. So,
It's amazing how different one brand of Turo is to another, right?
Correct. Yes. It's actually me some rare Turo in the U.S., so...
Yeah. Hey, I've got a whole bag of Rar Pilsner sitting in my garage. So
that's cool.
So let's talk about a bit about some of your other beers that you make. So Pale Ale is probably your most popular. What are some other popular beers that you make?
Yeah, actually, one of our best sellers, even before the Pale Ale, we just released it like a few months ago, but the before it was New England IPAs. We released a, it's called the Far, Far Away Galaxy IPA. We got some Galaxy hops, and yeah, we just experimented with it. We used a London Ale yeast. Hazy was not that popular here yet, like 2 years ago. But now, yeah, a lot of brewers are just doing hazy IPAs, and the homebrew community or the craft beer community, we love them. So,
are you saying that the hazy IPAs have gone global?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Carter?
Oh, you're fine. Are you saying that hazy IPAs have now gone global?
Yeah, I can say that. Here in the Philippines, it's very popular. Even if I go to like Thailand or Vietnam, Singapore, even in like the Asia Beer Conference, it's a topic that a lot of brewers discuss and a lot of brewers are making.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, and to me, I'll let that sound dissipate and edit it out.
Yeah, you know, there's still a construction at the brewery, so I can.
You're good, man. totally fine.
Sorry, I forgot that. Yeah, my guys are
bad. Yeah, you're totally cool. But yeah. That's why we do this in post. So quick question for you. We're talking about hazies. To me, I love hazy IPAs in the summer, you know, especially with the heat. Do you feel that's kind of that juicy flavor is something that really attracts people in Southeast Asia because it's so refreshing?
Yes, I agree. Yeah, it's about the tropical flavor. We like tropical fruits here. You know, when you drink a hazy IPA that has good hop aroma, sometimes you get a lot of mangoes, tropical flavors, and that's something that we can relate to because we have a lot of fruits here. So I think it's only the body that some people are like it's too thick for them, and it depends maybe on the how much yeast and how much phenols or polyphenols are in the beer or the proteins. But some brewers like ours, we release a hazy IPA that's not too thick, and yeah, a lot of people still love the hops and just the mouthfeel is not too thick. I mean, yeah.
That's awesome. What's the water like there? Do you make adjustments to your water? What's the process look like water wise?
Yeah. So, the water we use a reverse osmosis filter. It's a 5-stage filter, so it's just the clean water that we use, and we adjust our water based on the beer style that we're making. We have some salts. That we use for, let's say, New England IPA, the sulfate to chloride ratio, and we just don't use I don't trust honestly the water in that we get from the faucet here. We haven't tried testing them, but we just go straight to just a reverse osmosis.
Yeah, if you're gonna make many different styles of beer, it's kind of better to start with a clean slate anyway, right?
Correct. Yeah. But San Miguel is a very popular beer brand here. I mean, I heard that, they established the brewery wherein there's a good water source, like here in the Philippines, different regions where they established the brewery with a good water sources. So we're not in that, in those locations, but maybe if you move, we should try it. Should try the water from the mountains, those areas. But yeah, we're in the city right now, and I don't trust the water that we have here.
Hey, that's always a challenge, I think, anywhere. I think that when you look at the quality of the water that goes into it, I mean, that's 90% of what's in beer, right, is water.
Correct.
And so yes, it just has to be good quality.
Yes.
Yeah, let's talk a bit about what it looks like distribution-wise, right? You said that you're doing kegs, you're doing bottles, and let's take COVID out of this. I know that that's the world now, and you're doing all bottles and cans, but What does distribution look like in the Philippines? Is it something where you're distributing locally to bars in the area? Are you able to sell to gas stations? Or what does that look like?
Yeah, so here is it's better, actually. In the US, you have the three-tier system. Here in the Philippines, we don't have that. So you can sell directly to consumers. So for our brand, we started working with our distributors. So we just keep on brewing, and then they go here, they grab the kegs and distribute it to bars and restaurants. Sometimes if the bar go directly to us, they can also order from us directly, but we have the same price point to the distributor, basically. So anywhere, any channel, they can go, they can do that. But sometimes we prefer also the distributors because they can be, like, you know, the core logistics, and they have all the manpower. Yeah, kegs, and you can sell it everywhere, you know, gasoline and groceries. But before you go to the grocery stores, the supermarkets and groceries, they look for the FDA, and that's the thing. A while ago, I mentioned about the CPR. The trick here, the limitation here is actually we get the CPR after 4 to 6 months per product. So that's challenging. We can release a new beer before the supermarket gets it. They will look for the CPR, and we have to sign, register it to the FDA. And only after 6 months that we can release it to them. So that's the tricky part, where I think in the US you can, you know, a week maybe, you can already release that beer.
Yeah, so there's a lot of lag time of when you're making a beer to actually getting it to market, because you have to go through a little bit of, I guess the word I would use is some red tape, right?
Correct, that's right. Yeah, that's the red tape here. And, you know, it's sometimes it took a while, yeah.
Yeah. Are you able to, at least, like, if you had your tap room open, are you able to experiment and sell that over the tap, over the bar, and then once you kind of get those things in line, then kind of try to distribute it? Is that the process,
right?
Or do you have to wait 6 months even to sell it over the bar?
Yeah, that's the reason why we started we focus on the tap room, because we can, of course, as a home brewer too, or as a brewer, I started from a home brewer, I want to make beers and, you know, try to get a feel of what the market really like. What we do is we brew beers and we sell it here in the tap room, even on kegs. We can sell it on bars. It's just that if you go to the, if you want to sell it in the supermarkets, and if it's bottled or canned, then yes, you will need the FDA. But
yeah, it has to be properly labeled and approved.
Correct. Because of the labeling. Yeah, correct.
Yeah. That makes total sense, actually.
Yeah, yeah. That's why kegs, yeah, we push a lot of kegs before the pandemic, but now yeah, most bars are still closed right now, actually. It's not, the scene here right now is really different.
Yeah, it's the pandemic is just throws everything it's one of those things where beer is such a social beverage, right? We get with our friends and we sit around and we have beers and get a little jolly and have a good time, right? And the pandemic has just really said, no, that is not fun. 2020 is not going to be fun for anyone.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's been tough for us here. You know, you can go to a brewery now, but you have to sit at a table and you have to be 6 feet apart, and you can't have tables of more than six people in a single party.
Oh,
so there's heavy restrictions on even serving here. And not to say, not to get political or anything, you know, but here in the United States, we are also not the best at the pandemic. We're definitely probably the worst in the entire world when it comes to the amount of cases. So,
same here.
You know, don't take our advice.
Yeah, same here. Actually, only recently that our tap room, we only opened like a month because of the lockdown. So, and the problem here is we also had the liquor ban. So really, that stopped everything. You know, you can't even sell on directly to customers, and even if you have bottles or cans. So that really hit us hard. So,
yeah. Well, but they have recently lifted that, right?
You're only allowed to sell in tap rooms to two glasses per person, and with a 50% capacity because of the social distancing. And you're only allowed to sell deliver your beers to consumers from like 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. or 5 p.m. I think, yeah, Quezon City. Depends on the city too. So yeah, so there's still a lot of limitation, but we're trying to our best to, you know, still push our beers during those time frames.
Oh man, we're all gonna get through this, Raul. We're gonna get through it.
Hopefully.
Hopefully we'll have breweries left when this is over.
Exactly.
Well, it sounds like you're expanding, so that isn't a bad thing, right?
Yeah. I'm still hopeful. You know, we're still continuing with our expansion, and you know, maybe hopefully next year things will go back. We'll stabilize and we'll be ready by then. You know, these challenges are giving us also the reason to, you know, to at least check all our recipe and, you know, our process, our business, and yeah, I'm sure we'll be stronger after this.
Well, Raul, let's get some information out there to the rest of the world, since we're talking about a brewery. What's the name of your brewery? How can we? Do you have a website? Can we push it a little bit?
Yeah. So our brewery name is Elias Wicked Ales and Spirits. It's a microbrewery based in Quezon City. We have a website. It's www.wickedelias.com. We are very active in Instagram and also Facebook. And we've been open for maybe 2.5 years.
That's awesome. And just if you're listening to this show, you can go to the show notes, just whatever app you're listening to this podcast on, just look in the show notes there. And I'll have links to Raul's website. I'll have a link to his Instagram so you can check it out. Hey,
Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're listening to this, what we'll do is, I don't know about you, but I love following breweries all over the world as part of my Instagram. It's kind of my, I have home brewers I follow in Hong Kong, all over the place. And just because I love to see what people are making globally. And I'm just surprised at how much of it is actually very similar to what I'm making. Right. And so it's so great to, I don't know, it just really brings me together with other brewers. So
yeah.
So, if you're listening to the show, please go to the show notes and check out Raul's brewery. Yeah. I'm very, very excited to kind of get it out there. And Raul, thank you so much for coming on Homebrewing DIY. If there's any time that you want to come back on the show and talk about beer, I'm here. I'm ready to talk. I'm always looking for somebody to talk to. So
yeah. Thank you so much for inviting me, Colter. Yeah, I really appreciate it. And it's always I'm always happy to share. Even if you have some, you know, followers that would like to open or a brewery in the Philippines or start brewing here, yeah, you can contact me and I can give them some of the some advices or mistakes that I did when I started opening a brewery.
We are all going to make mistakes, especially you're starting a business. Well, thank you, Raul.
All right, thank you.
I'd like to thank Raul for taking the time to come on this week's show. I learned a lot when it came to what it's like to homebrew in another country. You can always learn more about the show by heading over to the show notes. There I will link to Raul's Instagram so that you can check out a bit of the beers that he is making. Also, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all one word, Homebrewing DIY. Love to see you following us on social media. Well, that's it for this week. We'll talk to you next week on Homebrewing DIY.